Eddie, the Collegiate Senior. Chapter 1. A New Chapter, Part 2. Back at the service station, Eddie has a new project going on. Kathy has purchased a brand new Volkswagen bus. Eddie has found a suitable engine from a Porsche 930 to replace the comparatively anemic stock four-cylinder engine in the business. Kurt Richter has assured Eddie that the conversion is possible and will be helping Eddie with the project. Knowing Kurt and Eddie, the Volkswagen bus will handle more like a sports car. At Northside High School, Barbara has discovered that Mr. O'Brien is a registered member of the Communist Party. Given Mr. O'Brien's past behavior, this is not surprising news. What spurred Barbara's interest in investigating Mr. O'Brien is that certain teachers have been assigning large time-consuming projects, which are due on the day of a significant sporting event. Specifically, Mr. O'Brien and a few other teachers have assigned numerous time-consuming assignments, which suspiciously seem to coincide with each other, right before a football game or cross-country meet. Barbara has been investigating, attempting to find out what other teachers may also be members of the Communist Party. Since the weather has been beautiful, Mr. Fraser has been having the team work out on the outdoor track. One reason for the outdoor workouts is so that Mr. Fraser and Dr. Zunday can assemble an unbeatable field team long before the spring. After all, Dr. Karakova did drop a hint to the other coaches that, with Dr. Zunday now on board, they have again raised the bar, this time in the field events. Learning that Dr. Zunday is now in the picture was the last thing the other teams wanted to hear. The other reason for the outdoor workouts is to take advantage of the pleasant weather. Over in the field area, a few of the seasoned track athletes try their hand at the various field events. Mark, taking the gold medal in the hammer during last year's spring divisional meet, looks strong. Sean Green, now a sophomore, also looks strong in the hammer and the shot put. Today, Green, along with a few others, is trying his hand at the javelin. And today, Eddie decides to give Mark some competition in the hammer. Eddie takes hold of the hammer and gets on the pad. Mark tells Green, "You'd better watch out. The last time Eddie threw the hammer a few years ago, it landed in the stands." Mark is, of course, pulling Green's leg. Green asks, "Really? Were there people in the stands?" Not missing a beat, Mark replies, "Yeah. It was during a meet. Fortunately, nobody got hurt." Eddie lets go of the hammer, with a perfect shot into the center of the landing zone. Mark wipes his forehead and exclaims, "Wow. Good shot. We all lucked out." Overhearing Mark and Green's conversation is Bobby B, who tells Green, "He's messing with you. Don't listen to him." Mark tells Bobby B, "Yeah, right. And now that Mr. Zunday is back, I'm sure you'll be taking much better care of the shot put." Bobby B suddenly looks worried, remembering the ongoing shot put saga from his high school years. Courtney, a team assistant driving the golf cart today, in charge of retrieving the field implements, retrieves the hammer. Returning the hammer to the launching area, Courtney delivers the measurement to another team assistant in charge of record keeping. Courtney then walks over to Dr. Zunday, telling him, "I think you should know this. There are two guys hanging out in the east tunnel watching us. One guy has binoculars, and the other guy has one of those big parabolic microphones." Dr. Zunday turns around, facing away from where the potential spies are, and whispers to Courtney, "Do me a favor. Go and get either Coach Fraser or Coach Layton and tell them to come here. Whatever you do, don't mention what this is about. With that microphone, they'll be able to hear you." Courtney replies, whispering, "Okay," and heads over to inform one of the other coaches to see Dr. Zunday. Mr. Fraser walks over to Dr. Zunday, asking, "What's up?" Dr. Zunday replies, "Follow me." Dr. Zunday leads Mr. Fraser toward the west tunnel, where they cannot be heard. While they are walking, Mr. Fraser is getting concerned at Dr. Zunday's silence. Mr. Fraser again asks, "So, what's going on?" Evading the real issue at hand, Dr. Zunday replies, "With Bobby B., Mark, and Green in the Hammer, we should sweep that event this year. They have all turned in exemplary performances. And Eddie is not too bad at the shot put. I suspect he could take the silver medal at the divisional meet." Mr. Fraser is now keenly aware that there is definitely a problem. What Dr. Zunday verbalized is not news to Mr. Fraser. As they enter the West Tunnel where their conversation cannot be intercepted, Dr. Zunday explains, "Courtney tells me there are two guys in the East Tunnel with binoculars and a parabolic microphone." Hearing the news, Mr. Fraser replies, "The spies are back. How much do you want to bet one of them is Brad Evans?" Dr. Zunday replies, "You're probably right. Evans has been quite the pain in the ass over at the high school. Barbara caught him spying on the team a few times last year." Mr. Fraser tells Dr. Zunday, "Well, we need to take care of this right now, otherwise it will never stop." From the West Tunnel, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle and yells out, "Coach Layton. Eddie. Braden. Mark. Bobby B. Please see me now." Provost Layton and the four trusted veterans of the track jog over to see Mr. Fraser. Dr. Zunday smiles and comments, "You obviously have a plan, George." Mr. Fraser replies, "Yes. I am going to have those guys arrested for trespassing and physically removed from the stadium. And when they see who they are up against, I believe they'll think twice about coming back. And besides, Mark always looks forward to messing with people." Provost Layton and the four athletes arrive in the West Tunnel. Mr. Fraser and Dr. Zunday explain the situation, which makes Provost Layton quite furious. Mr. Fraser then explains, "Here's what we're going to do, that is if you guys are up to it." Addressing Eddie and Mark, Mr. Fraser explains, "Eddie and Mark will take a lap around the track. When you guys approach the other tunnel, you'll take a sudden detour and sprint toward the tunnel." Addressing Bobby B. and Braden, Mr. Fraser explains, "Bobby B. and Braden, you'll enter the tunnel from the other side, preventing them from escaping. Then, they'll be trapped." Mr. Fraser then explains, "When Eddie and Mark are approaching the tunnel, I will blow my whistle. That's when I want Braden and Bobby B. to move in. I want these two guys apprehended." Mr. Fraser then asks, "Is everyone good with this?" Everyone wholeheartedly agrees, especially Provost Layton, who has had enough of the spies spying on the team. Mr. Fraser tells Bobby B. and Braden, "Okay. You guys get into position. I'll give you 3 minutes, which is more than enough time." Braden and Bobby B. head out of the other end of the tunnel, and Mr. Fraser starts his stopwatch. Once they are outside the stadium, Braden and Bobby B. head toward the other tunnel. Mr. Fraser tells Dr. Zunday, "Head back to the field area for the time being, so we don't arouse too much suspicion." Dr. Zunday heads back to the field area where he will get a bird's eye view of the events as they unfold, interested to see how Mr. Fraser's plan works. Wanting a front row seat, Provost Layton walks up into the stands where she cannot be seen from the tunnel, inconspicuously making her way to the other side of the stadium where the spies are situated. 3 minutes later, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie and Mark, "Go ahead and run down the track. When you get to the curve, head to the tunnel and apprehend these guys." Eddie and Mark take off as Mr. Fraser exits the tunnel. Watching as Eddie and Mark jog down the track, Mr. Fraser blows his whistle as the runners approach the curve and jogs over to the other tunnel where he will join the party. Eddie and Mark get to the curve and make a hard right, sprinting to the tunnel where they blitz the two spies. Seeing that they have been caught, the two spies attempt to make a run for it, thinking that they will escape through the other side of the tunnel. Seeing Bobby B. and Braden rushing from the other direction, the spies turn around, quickly realizing they are cornered. As the four athletes approach, one of the spies tries to evade the reception and make a run for it. He is quickly apprehended by Braden. Seeing that he has no way out, the other spy wisely gives himself up. Brad Evans, who was apprehended by Braden, exclaims, "Let me go." Putting Evans into an armed lock, Braden bluntly replies, "No. There's someone who wants to talk to you." Mark places the other spy into an armed lock, who is none other than Todd McCutcheon. McCutcheon exclaims, "Let me go. You're hurting me." Mark tightens the arm lock and replies, "Hurting you? I haven't even started to hurt you, Junior." Eddie grabs the parabolic microphone and tape recorder from Evans, prompting Bobby B. to confiscate McCutcheon's binoculars, camera, and notepad. Evans and McCutcheon are escorted to the end of the tunnel, where Mr. Frazier and Provost Layton are waiting for them. Delivering the perpetrators, Mark announces, "Look what we found." Braden adds, "It looks like we got some trash to take out." Mr. Frazier smiles and tells Evans and McCutcheon, "I've got to hear this one. What are you two clowns doing here? Start talking." "I'm listening." Evans replies, "We're not telling you anything. Tell them to let us go." Mr. Frazier laughs and exclaims, "Let you go? You've got to be kidding me. I'm going to ask one more time. What are you two guys doing here?" Evans insists, "We're not telling you anything." Mr. Frazier smiles and replies, "Fine, then. Have it your way." Mr. Frazier turns to Braden, winks, and asks, "Officer Braden, does this microphone and these binoculars match the description of the ones that were stolen from the team over the summer?" Catching on, Braden replies, "Yes, sir. I believe they do." Mr. Frazier nods his head and replies, "Wow. We have a bigger problem here than I thought." Evans exclaims, "We didn't steal anything. These belong to," then catches himself, being careful not to reveal whom he is working for. Mr. Frazier smiles and concludes, "So, someone else stole this equipment. This is getting more interesting all the time." Evans insists, "No one stole anything. These aren't yours." Braden replies, "Yeah, right. Ain't nobody gonna believe that shit. How many times have I busted your asses already? And if I remember correctly, I already busted your ass for breaking into the arena and stealing a bunch of shit. There ain't nobody out there who's gonna believe you too." Mr. Frazier asks Provost Layton, "Do you have any suggestions of what we should do with these two clowns?" Provost Layton replies, "Nothing for right now. We have practice to conduct." Provost Layton then instructs Braden, "Officer Braden, would it be too much trouble for you to meet with the officer on duty and have these two trespassers transported to the campus jail?" Braden replies, "No, ma'am. That would be no trouble at all. I'd be glad to." Leaving great uncertainty as to how much time Evans and McCutcheon will be spending in the campus jail, Provost Layton announces to everyone, "I'll deal with this problem later. We all have a training session to get back to." Provost Layton tells Eddie, "Edward, will you please run over to the arena and call the campus police? Please explain to them that there are two trespassers who need to be detained until I can decide what to do with them. Tell them the trespassers can be picked up at the service entrance to the outdoor stadium where Officer Braden, Mark, and Bobby B. have them detained." Eddie replies, "Got it." Handing Bobby B. the microphone and tape recorder, Eddie runs over to the arena to contact the police. Seeing that he is in big trouble, Evans exclaims, "We're not trespassing." Braden tells Evans, "Yeah, right. You keep telling yourself that, Junior." Mr. Frazier and Provost Layton get back to practice. Braden and Mark escort Evans out of the tunnel, over to the service entrance about 100 feet away. They are joined by Bobby B., who will serve as a backup. At the service entrance, Mark asks McCutcheon, "So, Junior, what are you doing spying on our team?" McCutcheon replies, "We weren't spying on your team." Braden tells McCutcheon, "Ain't nobody gonna believe that shit. You got a microphone, binoculars, and a camera. Now, who's gonna believe your ass? Bobby B suggests, while we're waiting, maybe we can try them out as hammers. That might make them talk. Mark replies, that's a good idea, bro. I bet I can throw McCrutchen farther than you can throw Evans. Bobby B quickly replies, $20. Mark replies, you got it. Evans and McCutcheon, who have already been used as hammers in the hammer throw, suddenly look very worried. As Mark is getting ready for the hammer throw, planning to use McCutcheon as the hammer, McCutcheon yells out, okay, okay. Nicholson sent us over here. Evans yells at McCutcheon, now you did it. Shut up, already. We're really going to get in trouble now. Braden laughs and exclaims, what are you talking about? Your ass is already in trouble, Junior. Braden asks McCutcheon, who's Nicholson? Evans yells out to McCutcheon, shut up, you idiot. Don't say anything else. Bobby B tells Mark, let's just get it over with and see how far you can throw him. Mark replies, yeah. I should do that. Bobby B suggests, we could throw them into the red zone. Maybe they'll run into a stray javelin or discus. Fortunately, for McCutcheon and Evans, Officer Kevin Morrison drives up, and with two guys in an arm lock, the officer clearly sees the problem. Unlocking and walking through the service entrance, Officer Morrison asks Braden, what do we got here? Braden explains, Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton caught these two guys spying on our team. Provost Layton wants to talk to them later, but she's busy with the team right now. She wants them put in the tank. She said she's gonna deal with them later. Officer Morrison looks over the perpetrators and replies, got it. Officer Morrison asks Braden, are there any charges? Braden replies, yes, sir. The only charge right now is trespassing. Evans interjects, we weren't trespassing. It's state property. Officer Morrison looks sternly at Evans and informs him, while the university is state property, there are no trespassing signs every 25 feet on the fence surrounding this stadium. Those signs are not a suggestion. They are the law. If you were inside that fence, you were trespassing. Evans is silenced, quickly realizing he is not talking his way out of this one. Out of the blue, Evans exclaims, I want my equipment back. Officer Morrison asks Braden, what is this equipment he's talking about? Braden explains, they had a microphone, tape recorder, a notebook, camera, and binoculars. It's all sitting on the ground, near the tunnel. Officer Morrison replies, I'll be back for that later. Braden offers, I'm on duty after practice. If you want, I can take care of the equipment. Officer Morrison replies, sure. That would be a big help. Officer Morrison arrests Evans and McCutcheon for trespassing and reads them their rights. Evans and McCutcheon are placed in handcuffs and taken to the campus police station. Braden, Mark, and Bobby B return to practice, where they continue their workout. After practice, Evans and McCutcheon's equipment is moved into the coach's room adjoining the indoor arena. Provost Layton and Mr. Fraser listen to the tape, hearing Mr. Fraser discussing strategy, orating his desire to assemble an unbeatable field team, and explaining today's agenda. Provost Layton hypothetically asks, I wonder how long this has been going on, George. Mr. Fraser replies, Evans has been spying on the high school team on and off for a while. When Ruff got arrested, he laid low for a while. But he's back. And Braden did mention that McCutcheon confessed that he's working for Dr. Nicholson, the coach over at Dogpatch University. Provost Layton laughs and tells Mr. Fraser, everyone's calling it Dogpatch University now. Examining the confiscated camera, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, this is a pretty nice camera. A Nikon F3. It's quite expensive, especially with this zoom lens. I'm fairly certain that this camera is far beyond the budget of either Evans or McCutcheon. I can assure you that, whoever owns this camera will want it back. Mr. Fraser smiles and replies, "That makes it easy. We won't have to chase them down. They'll come to us." Apparently quite familiar with photography, Provost Layton rewinds the film and unloads the camera, telling Mr. Fraser, "In the meantime, I'm going to have this roll of film developed." Looking over at the confiscated parabolic microphone, Mr. Fraser mentions, "I think you're right, Athena. Whoever is behind this, they are apparently well-funded. This microphone is not cheap." Mr. Fraser picks up the confiscated Zeiss binoculars and looks through the window into the arena, mentioning, "These binoculars aren't cheap either." Provost Layton informs Mr. Fraser, "Whoever owns this equipment, I am going to make them jump through a lot of hoops to get it back." Mr. Fraser smiles and laughs and asks, "How are you going to do that?" Provost Layton explains, "When whoever it is that owns this equipment contacts us, I'm going to make them produce the receipts and documentation bearing the serial numbers of the equipment. Then, they'll be informed that the campus police has impounded the equipment as evidence against Evans and McCutcheon. With any luck, Evans and McCutcheon will be fired by whoever hired them to spy on our team." With Mr. Fraser's boldness and daringness during confrontation, and Provost Layton's bulletproof logic, it's not likely whoever is behind spying on the university's team stands a chance of getting their equipment back anytime soon. Later that day, Officer Braden enters the administration building and heads to Provost Layton's office. Escorted in immediately, Officer Braden tells Provost Layton, "I know you're probably busy. Do you have a few minutes?" Provost Layton tells Officer Braden, "Please, come in and have a seat." Quite surprised to see Officer Braden during the day, Provost Layton asks, "What's up?" Officer Braden replies, "I have some news about Evans and McCutcheon." Surprised that any news can come so fast, Provost Layton sits back and replies, "I can't wait to hear this." Officer Braden explains, "Evans and McCutcheon are demanding to be released. And they demanded that they get their one phone call. So, Chief Toledo allowed them to make one phone call each." Braden then laughs and finishes, "Chief Toledo wrote down the numbers that Evans and McCutcheon dialed." Handing Provost Layton a piece of paper with the phone numbers Evans and McCutcheon dialed, Braden continues, "The number that Evans dialed comes back to Dr. Nicholson, the coach over there at Dogpatch University. And you'll never guess who the phone number McCutcheon dialed comes back to." Provost Layton replies, "Hopefully, not the coach of another team in the division." Officer Braden smiles and explains, "The number McCutcheon dialed comes back to Mayor Bradford Jameson's office. He's the guy that we've seen hanging around at the Dogpatch University bench." Provost Layton replies, "Can this get any worse? This obviously goes a whole lot deeper than I originally thought." Provost Layton curiously asks Braden, "Who started calling them Dogpatch University anyway?" Officer Braden replies, "That was Mark." Provost Layton laughs and comments, "I should have known." Braden also informs Provost Layton, "Mark and Eddie started calling McCutcheon McCutcheon in 8th grade. I don't know which one of them made up that name. If somebody's making up a name for someone, it's probably Mark or Eddie." Provost Layton sighs in frustration and asks, "Does anyone else know about this?" Officer Braden replies, "No, ma'am. No one outside the force." Provost Layton instructs Officer Braden, "I'll let Mr. Fraser and Dr. Zunday know. I'm sure they'll find this information interesting." Officer Braden informs Provost Layton, "Since Mayor Jameson is involved, Officer Hayes is definitely gonna want to hear about this one. Eddie would be the best way to let Officer Hayes know. He comes into Eddie's service station all the time. They talk a lot." Provost Layton tells Braden, "Okay. Let Eddie know and have him tell Officer Hayes." Provost Layton laughs, then comments, "This is getting more interesting every day. I can only imagine where this path will lead." Officer Braden then asks, "We're transferring Evans to the county and McCutcheon to the hospital. Did you want to talk to either of those guys before we transfer them? Provost Layton asks, what's this about taking McCutcheon to the hospital? Braden explains, somewhere between when we busted them and Officer Morrison took them to the tank, McCutcheon must have taken some sort of drugs. When I stopped by the station, McCutcheon was in the tank, chanting. Mark and no Johnson, Eddie is ahead. Mark with the Johnson, Eddie got no head. Provost Layton shakes her head and replies, let's do this. Let the county determine whether McCutcheon should go to the hospital. If we're lucky, the county can add a drug charge to the trespassing charges. Go ahead and file the trespassing charges with the county and have them transferred there. The trespassing charges will tie their equipment up as evidence for a long time, which is my intention. If they lose several thousands of dollars of equipment every time they get caught spying on our team, it might just give them an incentive to stop. Officer Braden gets back on patrol and is glad to hear of Provost Layton's esoteric strategy of dealing with Evans and McCutcheon. Working on Kathy's Volkswagen bus, Eddie has removed the original drive train. The frame, now reinforced as recommended by Kurt Richter, is ready to receive the Porsche 930 turbocharged six-cylinder engine. Bobby B., wanting to try his hand at some unconventional mechanical work, is helping Eddie with the project. Being thrown in at the deep end, Bobby B. is learning more than he ever expected. As they are installing the engine, Bobby B. asks Eddie, is replacing the engine going to void the warranty? Eddie laughs and replies, I'm sure it will. But you just gave me an idea. When I get this finished, someday I'm going to take it to the Volkswagen Porsche Audi dealership and get them to do an oil change. I want to see the look on their faces. Bobby B. comments, that would be really funny. Officer Richard Hayes rolls into the service station and, seeing him walk back to the service area, Eddie asks, what's up? Officer Hayes replies, what's up? Eddie replies, I'm putting a Porsche 930 engine into this bus. I'm guessing that it will perform a little better. Richard replies, yeah. I'd say. Eddie jokingly tells Richard, with the 930 engine, it will be a whole lot easier to evade the police. Richard laughs and replies, in all my years on the force, I've never pulled over anyone in a Volkswagen bus. We leave that to the officers on foot. Eddie then tells Richard, there's some news over at the university. You're not going to believe this one. Richard replies, believe me. Nothing surprises me anymore. Eddie explains, one of the team assistants caught Brad Evans and Todd McCutcheon spying on the team. So, we detained them, and Provost Layton had them arrested for trespassing. Now quite interested, Richard asks, can we go into the office and talk? It sounds like I'm going to need to take some notes. Eddie replies, sure, and they all head into the office where Officer Hayes obtains more pieces of the puzzle. After Eddie and Bobby B. explain the entire situation, Officer Hayes taps his pen onto the desk and comments, every time one of these McCutcheon characters is involved, it turns out to be a big piece of the puzzle. And this Mayor Jameson character, I'm telling you. This guy is deeply involved with something, but his involvement is so many levels deep, it is difficult to pin him down. But I have a few leads. Now, I need to figure out where this Nicholson character fits in. His involvement is apparently more than just being a track coach. Eddie comments, it sounds like they all cover their tracks really well. Officer Hayes replies, they do. They are not as smart as they think they are. All these characters will make a mistake. That's when I'll catch them. On his way out, Officer Hayes asks Eddie and Bobby B., by the way, do you guys remember that time when this Todd McCutcheon character took a high dose of codeine, caffeine, and used an asthma inhaler before that distance race during last year's meet? Eddie replies, yeah. He thought he would have a better run, or something. Officer Hayes then explains, this Evans character, during a meet last year, had one of his runners over there at Centerville High School land in the hospital for the exact same reason. The runner had used the same combination of drugs. Can you even believe it? Eddie laughs and replies, "Now, I'm beginning to understand why Evans thought I beat him up at the beach last summer." Officer Hayes replies, "He obviously has ties to a supplier. I have my eyes on him." Officer Hayes then gets back on the road with a few more pieces to the puzzle. Eddie and Bobby B. get back to working on Kathy's high-performance Volkswagen bus. Right before Eddie closes for the day, Jimmy O'Brien drives into Eddie's service station, wanting his tank filled. O'Brien gets pleasure from seeing Eddie or Bobby B. fill his gas tank and cleaning his windshield. Seeing O'Brien behind the wheel, Eddie takes a break and goes out to the pumps, hoping for some free entertainment. Walking up to O'Brien, who is sitting in his car, Eddie asks, "Fill it up." O'Brien replies, "Yeah. And can you check the oil while you're at it?" Eddie replies, "Sure. No problem." While O'Brien's tank is being filled, Eddie opens O'Brien's hood and checks the oil. Eddie also incidentally notices that O'Brien's front left tire has been replaced and that the rim is all scuffed up. Seeing damage to the front end of O'Brien's vehicle, Eddie asks O'Brien, "What happened to your car? Did you hit something?" O'Brien replies, "My tire blew out, and I ran off the road." Acting surprised, Eddie asks, "Oh, really? When did that happen?" O'Brien replies, "About a week ago." Eddie asks, "Did you end up getting your flat tire fixed?" O'Brien replies, "They fixed it over at the department store, but it didn't last. So, I went to the tire shop, and they told me the tire has to be replaced." Eddie replies, "Really? I can't imagine why." O'Brien pays Eddie for the gas and 2 quarts of oil. As O'Brien drives off, Eddie wonders why O'Brien didn't get the other 3 tires replaced, as their useful life is just about over. When Eddie gets home that afternoon, Kathy asks, "So, how's my bus coming?" Eddie replies, "It's coming along good, but the labor charges are beginning to add up." Kathy asks, "Oh, really? How much am I up to?" Eddie replies, "With all the grueling work I put in today, you're up to 1 pizza. Kathy gives Eddie a high five and a kiss and tells him, "Deal." But Kathy already knew she and Eddie were getting pizza tonight. They will be joining Mark and Paula at the pizzeria later in the evening. At the pizzeria, Eddie and Kathy meet up with Mark and Paula. Joe, behind the counter, is glad to see the group still frequently comes in. Now that Kathy and Paula have both graduated, they don't see each other quite as much. But tonight they have the opportunity to catch up on what is going on in each other's lives. As they are waiting for the pizzas, Kathy asks Paula, "So, how's life over at the middle school?" Paula replies, "Wow, girl. You're not going to believe this. It's the same old shit, but I see it from the other side now. The same stuff happens as when we were there." Now seriously wondering, Kathy asks, "Really? Like what?" Eddie and Mark are also interested to hear Paula's stories. Paula explains, "At lunchtime, there are guys out on the field playing kill the man with the ball every day. Some kids sit on the lawn and talk, like we used to do. And the really studious ones go to the library after they eat lunch. And every day, there seems to be a fight that breaks out somewhere. And just like when we were there, if the right person is winning the fight, the teachers are really slow to break it up." Kathy replies, "It sounds like nothing much has changed." Moving on to more pertinent information, Paula energetically explains, "Oh. And there are a few students out there running laps on the track during one lunch period, and Mr. Harris is timing them. They are part of the track team. So, they train during the first half of lunch period, then they go in and eat. And get this. During study hall, Mr. Harris has the track team members go to gym class instead of going to the library. And while they are in gym class, They are out on the track running the interval drill while the other kids are playing football. Mark comments, "We used to sneak into gym class during study hall when we were there. After a while, all the teachers thought we were supposed to be in gym class when we should have been in study hall." Paula replies, "Yeah. But the rules have changed. Now they are actually allowed to do that." Paula smiles and tells everyone, "So, the girls on the track team show up in my gym class too during the study hall." Kathy comments, "Wow. The team is getting a lot of training in during the day, and the track season doesn't even start until spring." Paula replies, "I know, right? Oh, and get this. Mr. Harris told me that, last year, they won all the events in every meet." Mark comments, "That sounds vaguely familiar." Eddie replies, "Wow. It sounds just like when we were there. I wonder if the middle school has a Chucky." Paula laughs and continues, "It's worse." Paula asks Kathy, "Do you remember when I told you that there's this girl, Lillian Black, who I thought might have been the Chucky's sister?" Kathy replies, "Yeah." Paula explains to everyone, "Well, it turns out that she is the Chucky's sister. And she has the same endomorphic build and shitty attitude, just like the Chucky. But get this. She's in my gym class and health class, and she hasn't participated in gym class all year." Eddie interrupts Paula and asks, "Why not?" Paula replies, "It's because she's always got a doctor's note. First, it's asthma. Then, it's a sprained ankle. Oh, and what else? Strained muscles. Headaches. Digestive problems. Sleep problems. The list never ends." Mark comments, "Well, that hasn't changed either. The Chucky was always trying to get out of gym class." Eddie laughs and mentions, "That really makes no sense. The Chucky always tried to get out of gym class and then tried out for track." Paula replies, "The Chucky always was a conundrum of sorts." Joe brings the pizzas to the table and tells the group, "You guys are just as happy as ever. You always bring a smile to my face." Kathy replies, "Thank you, Joe. You are so sweet." Joe asks, "Is there anything else I can get for you guys?" Kathy looks around and, seeing everyone is okay for now, replies, "I think we're good for now." Joe asks, "What? No drill bits." The group laughs as Joe tells them, "I'll never forget that. And the shot puts and discus." Joe gets back to work and the group digs in. During dinner, Paula asks Kathy, "So, how are things over at the elementary school?" Kathy replies, "I really like my job. I love working with the kids. I think they all like gym class." Paula asks, "Really? It's usually pretty divided between those who like gym class and those who totally hate it." Kathy explains, "Yeah, I know. But for the girls who aren't as athletic, instead of forcing them to do something that they can't do, I give them something that they can do. Otherwise, they'll just be embarrassed in front of the class and hate gym class forever." Mark comments, "That's a good idea." Now curious, Paula asks Kathy, "How do you do that?" Kathy explains, "During gym class, I give them a choice of what they can do. Since it's been nice out, we've been going outside for gym class. I told them they can play soccer, bring out a hula hoop, or jump rope. So, some of the less athletic girls have really been getting into hooping. One of them can even now keep the hoop spinning around her waist, get it up to her chest, back down to her ankles, and up to her waist again." Paula exclaims, "Wow. That's really awesome." Kathy continues, "But, wait. Get this. When it was raining out the other day, we all stayed inside and hooped and jumped rope. The less athletic girls who have been practicing hooping and jumping rope really showed up, the more athletic ones. So, I keep telling them, some of you are really great at some sports, and some of you are really great at other sports. So, next week, when we go outside, I am going to make the girls who have been hooping and jumping rope play soccer. And, while they are playing soccer, I'm going to make the soccer players hoop and jump rope. Mark comments, "That's a really good idea. Not everyone is at the same level." Paula mentions, "Yeah, seriously. I'm going to try that in my classes." Kathy then explains, "Then, during class one day, I walked out with my hoop and a baton." Mark asks, "They are running relay races in elementary school." Kathy laughs and replies, "No. Like, in baton twirling. Majorettes. That kind of baton." As Kathy continues to laugh, Paula asks, "What do they call them today? Throwers." Kathy replies, "Yeah, I think so. They keep changing the title of the cool-looking girl with the baton." Kathy continues, "Okay, so back to my story. I told them to sit on the bleachers and watch me. So, I spun the baton, and then I threw the baton up into the air, and as it was spinning, I caught it behind my back. They all yelled out, 'Wow!' Then, I continued my routine. When I was done, I told them, 'If you can do that, you can get a free college education to any university that has a football team.' That is one of the reasons that gym class is so important. Then, after that, they all wanted to learn how to twirl the baton." Eddie tells Kathy, "Tell them about your mom." Quite curious, Paula asks, "Your mom? What's up with your mom?" Kathy smiles and replies, "Do you know how my parents' house backs onto the schoolyard?" Paula replies, "Yeah." Kathy explains, "One day, I looked over at their house, and I caught my mom watching me through the fence as I was teaching gym class." Paula softly exclaims, "That is so sweet. She was watching her daughter teach gym class. It must have made her so happy to see that." Kathy mentions, "She doesn't know that I saw her watching me. For as long as she could remember, Kathy always wanted to be an elementary school gym teacher. Today, she is glad she has chosen that profession." Mark asks, "Has anyone heard anything about the high school?" Paula mentions, "On my way home this week, I saw Johnson and Barbara out on the track with the team. So, I stopped by and talked with them. Karen and Amber are still working with them. Barbara says the team is looking good this year. She also said that things seem to be better now that a new principal has been hired. But she said that Mr. Brian and a few other teachers are causing trouble again. And Barbara really doesn't like Mr. Shapiro. She called him an ass." Mark comments, "That would be a dead giveaway that she doesn't like him." Kathy reminisces, commenting, "Well, nothing could be as bad as that old crumb and everything he did to keep all our teams from winning." Paula agrees, telling Kathy, "Yeah. By keeping the women off the team." Kathy comments, "Yeah, seriously. And if you wore cut-off shirts to school or drove a car onto school grounds, he suspended you. You can't get too much worse than that old crumb." Eddie replies, "Well, there is that asshole, Dean Grimsby. He's not too much better." Kathy replies, "Ain't that the truth?" Paula asks, "By the way, whatever happened to Dean Grimsby?" Eddie replies, "Richard said he's out on bail and that his attorneys are doing everything they can to delay the trial." Paula comments, "Yeah. So he can flee the country." Eddie reveals he can't because his bank accounts have been locked down. With a stroke of genius, Paula exclaims, "That's it. He's delaying his trial so he can get the gambling operation going again. Then, he'll get enough money to flee the country." Kathy tells Paula, "You might be onto something here." Paula tells everyone, "We need to let Richard know." Everyone agrees to inform Officer Hayes the next time anyone sees him. After dinner, Eddie and Kathy head home, as do Mark and Paula. On the way home, Kathy asks Eddie, "Hey, can we stop by and see my bus on the way?" Eddie replies, "Sure." All excited, Kathy exclaims, "This is like when I got my 914. I remember that day. It was the first day of summer break. Eddie takes a detour and heads to the service station so Kathy can see the work in progress. A few weeks later, right before the Thanksgiving holiday, Eddie is working on Kathy's Volkswagen bus. With only a few minor issues remaining to be addressed, the bus is almost ready for its road test. But progress is slow because customers come into the shop expecting service. Today, Eddie is installing wider aluminum wheels on the bus that will allow for better traction and handling. Interrupting Eddie's progress today is Jimmy O'Brien, who returns to the service station with his AMC Gremlin. Seeing O'Brien driving up to a service bay, Eddie and Bobby B figure that O'Brien has more than a fill-up on his mind. Eddie tells Bobby B, "Let's see who gets to help him. Rock, paper, scissors. On three. 1, 2, 3. Eddie and Bobby B have continued the tradition that Eddie and Angelo began years ago to decide who gets the pleasure of dealing with a customer who is a pain in the ass. Today, Eddie puts out paper and Bobby B puts out a rock. Eddie tells Bobby B, "Good luck, bro." But Bobby B doesn't care in the least. He has come to enjoy messing with Jimmy O'Brien. Walking out to greet the customer, Bobby B asks O'Brien, "What's your problem today?" O'Brien replies, "I'm ready to get my car fixed." Knowing exactly what is wrong with O'Brien's car, Bobby B asks, "Oh yeah. What's wrong with it?" O'Brien explains, "It's leaking oil bad. And the headlights stopped working." "Oh yeah, and there is a bad squeak in the back now." Bobby B pushes down on the rear bumper, not hearing a squeak. O'Brien explains, "It squeaks when I go over a bump." Bobby B lifts the rear end of O'Brien's car off the ground and drops it, replicating the squeak. O'Brien exclaims, "Hey, don't drop my car." Bobby B smiles, telling O'Brien, "Hey, stop worrying. Dropping it probably fixed something." Realizing O'Brien's car needs a significant amount of work, Bobby B walks into the service area and gets Eddie. Bobby B warns Eddie that O'Brien's car is in significant disrepair, but Eddie already knows that. Eddie walks out and asks O'Brien, "What's the problem?" O'Brien explains, "It leaks oil bad, the headlights stopped working, and there is a bad squeak in the back. And it just doesn't run well." Eddie advises O'Brien, "Sell it for scrap metal." Suddenly getting miffed, O'Brien exclaims, "Why does everyone keep telling me that?" Eddie explains, "Because you'll spend several $1,000s to repair that rust bucket, and once it's repaired, it won't even be worth $500. You can spend the money on repairs, but you'd be better off buying something else." Not liking Eddie's advice, O'Brien asks, "Well, can you give me an estimate?" Eddie replies, "No." O'Brien asks, "Why not?" Eddie replies, "Because I'm not going to fix it." O'Brien tells Eddie, "I'll just get someone else to fix it then." Eddie replies, "Go ahead. You'll find someone to fix it, but you're making a big mistake." O'Brien drives off, thinking that Eddie might just be right. And Bobby B, knowing what a mess O'Brien's car is relieved. Later, in the afternoon, Lynn Burson drives into the service station and walks into the office. Admiring Eddie's wall of photographs of happy customers as she is waiting, Lynn recalls that, years ago, Eddie asked her what kind of camera to buy. Eddie walks into the office and exclaims, "Lynn, how have you been?" Lynn replies, "Really good." Referring to the wall, Lynn tells Eddie, "It looks like you have a lot of happy customers." Eddie replies, "Yeah. And thanks for the advice on the camera." Lynn asks, "What did you end up getting?" Eddie replies, "I bought a Nikon F2, just like yours. I just keep it on the automatic setting, and I get perfect photographs." Lynn comments, "Your photos look really good." Looking over the numerous photographs, seeing one in particular, Lynn exclaims, "Wow. What happened to that guy?" Eddie explains, that's Andy Goldshit. He tried to attack me with a pipe one day last year. I had to kick the shit out of him. Then, I snuck a photograph when the paramedics were working on him. Lynn exclaims, I remember that guy from our senior year. That day, during the physics test, really took the cake. He was a real jerk. Eddie replies, he still is. Eddie asks, so, what's up today? Lynn explains, I'm going to Florida over Thanksgiving. Can you check over my car before I leave? Eddie replies, sure. No problem. Eddie has serviced Lynn's Ford Mustang since she bought it 4 years ago. It's not likely there is much wrong with it. Eddie drives Lynn's Mustang into an empty bay and looks it over, finding that it is time for a tune-up and new tires. Lynn approves the work and Eddie gets busy. As Lynn is waiting in the office, Eddie asks Bobby B, hey, do you remember Lynn Burson? Bobby B replies, yeah. She was in our class. She was one of the nice girls. Eddie tells Bobby B, she's in the office. Take a break and go and say hi to her. Bobby B walks into the office and, seeing Lynn, exclaims, wow. It's Lynn Burson. How have you been? Lynn replies, Bobby B. Wow. Are you working here now with Eddie? Bobby B replies, yeah. And I'm also doing some work with Mark. Bobby B asks, what have you been up to? Lynn explains, photography. I worked for our local newspaper for a while, but now I'm doing weddings, prom photos, baby pictures, and that sort of thing. Bobby B and Lynn talk for a while, catching up on the last few years, as Eddie works on Lynn's car. Bobby B and Lynn's conversation is suddenly interrupted by an irate customer storming into the office, demanding service. The customer yells out, what do I have to do in order to get a car serviced around here? Bobby B looks at the customer and calmly asks, what's your problem? Lynn turns around and tells the customer, oh, it's Mr. O'Brien and Jimmy. So, how have you guys been? Not that it's any of his business, Mr. O'Brien rudely exclaims, what are you doing here? Bobby B replies, she's getting her car serviced. Mr. O'Brien then demands to know of Bobby B, and are you getting your car serviced too? Bobby B sarcastically replies, no. I work here. The fact that I'm wearing a mechanic's uniform might just give it away. Originally walking into the service station quite irate, Mr. O'Brien is now even more angry. Mr. O'Brien angrily asks Bobby B, so, why won't Eddie service Jimmy's car? I demand an explanation. Bobby B calmly replies, I don't know. Why don't you ask Eddie? Mr. O'Brien replies, I think I'll do that. As Mr. O'Brien is headed to the door to the service area, Bobby B tells Mr. O'Brien, customers are not allowed in the service area. Mr. O'Brien angrily exclaims, then, get Eddie for me. Bobby B slowly stands up and whispers to Lynn, follow me. Bobby B and Lynn enter the service area, ticking Mr. O'Brien off even more since Lynn is a customer and is walking into the service area. Bobby B tells Eddie, Mr. O'Brien is in the office. He wants to know why you won't fix Jimmy's car. Eddie smiles and replies, because I don't want to. But that's not going to fly with him. This should get interesting. I'll be there in a minute. Eddie tells Lynn, after the tune-up and with the new Pirelli tires, your car should run really well. You'll even notice a difference in how it handles. Bobby B and Lynn hang out in the service area with Eddie, avoiding Mr. O'Brien for the moment. When Lynn was working for the local newspaper, she took a photograph of Mr. O'Brien getting out of his Mercedes at the high school. Lynn was accompanying a reporter who wanted to interview Mr. O'Brien about his involvement with the gambling ring. Mr. O'Brien declined to speak with the reporter, vehemently maintaining that he is innocent of any wrongdoing. In the photograph that Lynn took, Mr. Brian had a dramatic look of fright on his face. The picture, landing on the front page of the newspaper, did not make Mr. Brian very happy. Neither did seeing Lynn at Eddie's service station today. Eddie walks into the office, followed by Bobby B. and Lynn. Seeing Mr. Brian, Eddie asks, "Can you be helped?" Mr. Brian replies, "No, but Jimmy needs help." Lynn giggles, amused at Mr. O'Brien's answer to Eddie's interestingly worded question. Eddie replies, "That's obvious." Now beyond irate, Mr. Brian asks Eddie, "And just what is that supposed to mean?" Making Mr. Brian look like a fool, Eddie replies, "He was in here this morning. It's obvious that he needs some sort of help." In quite a sarcastic tone, Mr. Brian asks Eddie, "So, why won't you fix Jimmy's car?" Eddie bluntly replies, "Because I don't want to." Mr. Brian exclaims, "Because you don't want to." Hitting Mr. Brian with a reality stick, Eddie replies, "Exactly. It's not worth repairing. To properly repair Jimmy's car would cost somewhere around $5,000. When I'm finished with the work, the car would be worth around $500. He'd be better off selling it and buying something else. I'm doing him a favor by not repairing it. So, deal with it." Mr. Brian, now looking quite stupid, is silenced by Eddie's logic. Eddie, not caring about what more Mr. Brian may have to say, walks back into the service area, finishing the work on Lynn's car. Breaking the silence in the room, Mr. Brian tells Jimmy he might have a point. We'll see what the other shop has to say. Bobby B. tells Mr. Brian, regardless of what the other shops have to say, you might want to consider Eddie's advice. He's trying to save you a lot of money. Mr. Brian and Jimmy walk out, as Bobby B. tells them, have a nice day. As the door closes, Bobby B. tells Lynn, those two guys are really morons. Lynn replies, yeah. Tell me about it. Bobby B. and Lynn continue their conversation, which was rudely interrupted by Mr. O'Brien. A while later, Eddie walks into the office, telling Lynn, I'm finished. I think you'll notice a big difference. Lynn replies, thank you so much. I can't wait to get to Florida. Lynn pays for her service and thanks Eddie and Bobby B. again for their work. Lynn happily drives away and looking forward to spending the Thanksgiving holiday in Florida. The semester comes to a close and the university's track team is well prepared for the upcoming season. Mr. Fraser has again cut Delaney, who was not quite up to par when compared with the other runners. Mark is disappointed that he never got to switch Jeff McCutcheon's shampoo bottle with the special formula he made up. But the goal was to get McCutcheon and Delaney off the team, which was accomplished. Jeff McCutcheon has negotiated with the university and has agreed to be put on disciplinary probation. McCutcheon has agreed to transfer to another university by next semester in exchange for Braden dropping the assault charges. If McCutcheon fails to follow through, the assault charges will stand. Truth be told, Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton just wanted McCutcheon out of the university for good. And Braden did not care about the assault charges either. He, like the rest of the track team, simply wants McCutcheon gone. Brad Evans and Todd McCutcheon have been bailed out of jail and are back on the streets. Neither Evans nor McCutcheon has been seen at Northside High School nor at the university since being arrested for trespassing. Provost Layton is in no rush to return the confiscated equipment, which now sits in the campus police department's evidence room. At the university, it is now standard procedure for whoever is driving the golf cart and retrieving the field implements to periodically drive through the tunnels and along the perimeter of the stadium to ensure no one is spying on the team during practice. As the student athletes look forward to a well-deserved break, Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, Dr. Zunde, and Dr. Owens believe they can win all the medals in the upcoming divisional meet, sans the relay events where each university traditionally has only one entry. But to Mr. Fraser, the gold medals are the only ones that really matter. After attending the divisional coaches meeting early in the semester, Dr. Karakova is interested to see whether Mr. Fraser can pull off winning all the medals. And finally, the coaches of the other teams now clearly understand how and why the university is so successful. The wild card in the upcoming meet is how drastically the other teams have changed their training protocols to meet the higher standard of competition. Chances are that the other coaches have done little to improve their team's performance.